the texts of last week, and there were some very important paragraphs that I want to share with you. I can just assure you that in another context, im yirtzeh Hashem, I will come back to those portions that I left out and approach the subject in another way. We sit at Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the month of Chanukah. And because Chanukah is known as Chag HaUrim, the Yom Tov of Lights, I want to, this Rosh Chodesh and Im Yirtzeh Hashem next Rosh Chodesh Teves, which comes within Chanukah, to explore some of the variations on the theme of light as Rav Kook saw it. I have reprinted for you a chapter of one of his basic works, and that's Oros HaKodesh. Oros HaKodesh, the lights of holiness. It was put together by one of his Talmidim par excellence, and that was Rav David Cohn, the Nozir. And Rav David Cohn is Rav Shlomo Goren's father-in-law. Rav David Cohn was known as the Nozir of Yerushalayim. A brilliant mind who needed a synthesis in his early years of Torah learning and Lahavdil Greek philosophy and philosophy in general. And he describes his younger years, Rav David Cohn, as ACDC, on again, off again. He could not find a place for himself until he once in Europe, in Switzerland, he met and stayed with Rav Kook, Zatzal, and his son. And he knew that one night that this was the perfect blend that he was looking for, and became a disciple and a protege of Rav Kook. The manuscripts that Rav Kook wrote were given over in his lifetime to Rav David Cohn, and the Nozir went ahead and put together these topical compilations of thought. There are three volumes in Oros HaKodesh, which become probably the most important source book for trying to understand Rav Kook's teachings and his particular brand of hashkafa. So let's begin with the word light. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, Brias Olam, the second expression of his desire was Yehi Or, let there be light. And as creation went on, you should be familiar with the Rashi, that the original light, the primordial light that was created in a world of chaos, of tohu vavohu, that light ultimately was concealed, was subtly veiled, so that only the tzaddikim would be able to understand what light is. The symbol of light is synonymous with Ruach HaKodesh. When we speak about Ruach HaKodesh, divine intervention in the mind and in the hearts of human beings, we talk about Oros HaKodesh, the light that HaKodesh Baruch Hu shines forth. These are synonymous. Now, on Chanukah, Asher kitchonu b'mitzvaso v'tzivonu, the imperative of Chanukah is to go ahead and do what? Lahadlik ner shel Chanukah, to create light. The machlokas in the Gemara between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai is known. Beis Shammai says you've got to start out with the maximum amount of light. And just as the shemen decreased, so too you must decrease the numbers of candles. Beis Hillel said differently, Malim v'kodesh ve'in moridim, you have to go ahead and have an optimistic view, meaning that when you are dealing with light, one of the properties of light is not that it can be extinguished. Oh yes, I admit that it can be extinguished. But when we talk about light from a hashkofa Yehudis, Malim v'kodesh, when light becomes the symbol of Ruach HaKodesh, there's only one thing that happens, that it increases and goes on and on and on and spreads out even further. You know where we had that lesson taught to us architecturally. Do we have any architects tonight? Lawyers, I know we have. Accountants, I know we have. Architects, not here tonight. Where architecturally do we know that light has got to, in terms of Kodesh, has got to spread. Yofutsu mayin osech ochutsa must grow and be diffused further and further. That's it. The way the portals of the Beis HaMikdash were built. On the inside, it was very narrow. But on the outside of the wall, it was specifically built so that you had a broadening of perspective, as if to say the light of the menorah and the light of the kedusha, of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has got to go ahead and be spread out. This is absolutely fundamental to understanding. Yes?
Wouldn't this depend on your perspective? I mean, if you're looking from the Shemayim down, wouldn't the light be constricted?
Yeah, but no one in Shemayim needs, from Shemayim down, no one needs that Beis HaMikdash. It's not Sandim Ne'odom. It's the ones who came to the Azora who had to learn that, standing in the Beis HaMikdash. That's what his purpose is. That standing in the Beis HaMikdash, once you are there and in touch with the Shekhinah, which is in, you know, V'shachanti B'sochom, in the Beis HaMikdash, then you've got to be able to go and take that Shekhinah and diffuse it, and you don't lose it, it only grows and grows. Malin Bakodesh, it goes higher and higher, more intense as you go ahead and spread it. Now, you're going to light Hanukkah candles in Yitzhak Hashem Mishol Tovu Mitzachas in 3 weeks. You're going to light the candles. What is the essence of the lighting of those candles? Huh? Pirsume Nisa. You have to publicize the Nes. What Nes? What Nes? That in the fight of darkness and light, that light prevailed. The darkness being what? Being the destructive, pernicious philosophy that would have brought a generation, a Jewish generation, to its feet, and that's the Misyavnim, that is the Greek philosophy, and that the light of the Chashmonoyim, of pure Torah, was capable of prevailing. Now, I mentioned this several times, but you should know, in the yeshiva world, we speak about mitzvos, entire mitzvos, you speak about it in two dimensions. Every single mitzvah is examined on two levels. One is the maaseh ha-mitzvah, the action that you are required to do, and the other one is the kiyum ha-mitzvah, the essence of the mitzvah. I'll give you an example. You benched. You said birchas hamazon sometime. What was the maaseh? What was the action that was required of you? To say the words. What is the essence? What's the kiyum ha-mitzvah, birchas hamazon? That's giving sheva, giving thanks unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what you were able to do. Yechalta v'savota, and the essence is uveirachta es Hashem elekecha. You say Shema, morning and evening. What is the maaseh ha-mitzvah of Kriya Shema? You've got to read it. You've got to say it. Kriya. You've got to read it. What's the maaseh, what's the kiyum ha-mitzvah? What's the essence? Kabbalas ol malchus shemayim. That's the kavona over there. The maaseh ha-mitzvah of Chanukah, of hadlokas ner Chanukah, is to light the candles. The essence of the mitzvah, the kiyum ha-mitzvah, is what you call pirsume nisan, is I call the diffusion of the light, to be able to light up the darkness, and therefore you are not yotzei with the candles until when? Until it's dark. It has to be at night that you light. Otherwise, there's no maaseh ha-mitzvah. Now, one more bit of preface, and then we'll get down to the Oros HaKodesh. Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, the Shalosh Regalim, we know why we say Hallel. It's Yom Tov, it's a din of Simcha. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the last two Moadim, the last two Yomim Tovim in Torah, we also know why we don't say Hallel. We should say Hallel, it's Yom Tov. We say in Kiddush, Moadim L'Simcha. But we know that Sefer Chaim Umoves Niftochim Lefonecha, the book of life and death is open before you. Some of us will make it, deserves Hallel. Some of us may not make it. How can we go ahead and stand and say Hallel? It's impossible. So there are two more on the calendar. The next two Yomim Tovim after Pesach, Shavuos, Sukkos, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, I have to consider what? Chanukah and Purim. Chanukah I say Hallel. Purim I don't say Hallel. What is the standard answer?
Megillah.
That's the second standard answer. That Megillah is a substitute, is a quasi-Hallel. How do I know? Because if you were stranded on Gilligan's Island somewhere without a Megillah and it was Purim time and you didn't know the Purim and you didn't know the Megillah by heart, you say Hallel, because Hallel you know by heart. You sang it so many times in Young Israel all the time, so you know it already by heart. You say Hallel. And that would be the equivalent under these circumstances of having said the Megillah. Okay, but that's the second answer. What's the first answer? Why? What is the most common answer that is given as to why we don't say Hallel on Purim? Because the Nes occurred where? Chutz La'aretz. As opposed to Chanukah, that the Nes occurred in Eretz Yisrael. So I ask you a very simple question. A Nes is a Nes. What difference does it make if it happened to me in Czechoslovakia? Or Hungary? Or Persia by the Ayatollah? Or in Eretz Yisrael? Let's try to answer it. Page 1. Chochmas HaKodesh ve'Eretz Yisrael. The perception, the understanding of what Kedusha is in Eretz Yisrael. Claims Rav Kook, Chochmas HaKodesh, the perception, being able to understand what Kodesh is, Eino Zorachas Ki'im be'Eretz Yisrael. This perception does not glow. You see the words Shemesh Zorachat. It's the same thing. It's the verb that we use for light. It does not glow. Ki im be'eretz Yisrael, unless you are in Eretz Yisrael. Kol mashe mitzayirim b'chutz la'aretz, and any kind of vision of light, of chokhma, of holiness that we imagine, mitzayirim, is that we draw for ourselves, we picture for ourselves, b'chutz la'aretz. Einam ela toldos habina usifeho. This is only human intuition. But you know what human intuition is? It is not grounded sometimes in true reality because it's not there. It's intuition. Yafutsu mayin osecha chutzo virachavos palge mayin. It's only as a result of the fact that we know what Eretz Yisrael's Kedusha is and the Kodesh of Ruach HaKodesh in Eretz Yisrael that it spreads, it bursts forth from its source beyond Eretz Yisrael, beyond its borders. Yafutsu mayin osecha chutza, it goes beyond, and that's the only way we can pick it up. But the tributary, the source of this chokhmah, is exclusively in Eretz Yisrael. The simple answer. It's a simple answer over there. That after Har Sinai, that one transitory moment, on one Vav Sivan in the year 2448, after Har Sinai, there is no longer any Chochmas HaKodesh until you come to Eretz Yisrael. Everything else was on that one Chesed of his Galus Hashem, of his HaKadosh Baruch Hu's revelation, to indicate that indeed Melochol Ha'aretz Kivodo. But the Chochmah, the wisdom to be able to understand the challenge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the voice that, you know, the light that is beamed at us constantly is only Eretz Yisrael. Now I know that gives you rough stuff, you know, it makes life rough for you, Mike. I know all about that. But I know. Im Yirtzeh Hashem, you will yet see the light. You will yet see the light.
A lot of people go about making statements, I learned this from Gemara, Tafes, Omnalf, you know, whatever. He makes a statement here.
Yes.
And an anti-Zionist will say, well, who knows?
Yeah, there's only, yeah, there's only one thing over here. I can assure you that you will find a statement in Rambam, in Zohar, or in Gemara for every single one of the things he says. No question about it. Now, if you would like me by next time to document every single one of these sources for you, then I will show it to you in Chazal. All right? I'll give it to you right off the top of my head. Nevuah is exclusively in Eretz Yisrael.
Wasn't there one Nabi who was Chutz La'aretz?
Yecheskel. Yecheskel, after the Golos, he went into Golos. And everything that we have from Yecheskel is before the Golos, when he was in Eretz Yisrael. And it was the afterglow, the luminescence of the Chochmas HaKodesh that entitled him to Nevuah outside of Eretz Yisrael in Bavel. But it was all from Eretz Yisrael because of this Eretz Yisrael. So you say Moshe Rabbeinu again.
You know, so how can...
But again...
I don't start at the bottom, I go to the top.
You see, but I hear what you're saying. And this was the chesed of the Izgalus Hashem in that door. It was done specifically. It was a reversal of all the rules, simply because Bnei Yisrael had to be redeemed from Mitzrayim at that time. That was the nest, that was the chesed. But thereafter, you know, that was not the norm. The norm is that Eretz Yisrael gives you a dimension of Kodesh that no other place has. You say?
And Yon also, because there is
no question about
that.
Yeah. Okay. But had he not been in Tarshish, okay, and had he not been in Eretz Yisrael, he would not have had that afterglow.
We don't understand what you said about being able to find that there can never be another Tzolt'in.
No, you can never say that, because anything you do to tie the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in any which way renders HaKadosh Baruch Hu no different than any idol that the pagans had. Okay? Rabbi Yosef Albo, in his Sefer Rikorim, makes this point. He makes it in a very unusual manner. Rabbi Yosef Albo, having lived in the 1500s, the 15th century, was forced to debate publicly with the Christian clergy over there. It was one massive, massive debate in the city of Tortosa. It lasted for about 9 months, 1414 and 1415. And he was one of the strategists. Needless to say, he was being taunted by the Brit HaChadasha, this new bris, the covenant that the Nevi'im speak about. I will give you a new heart and a new covenant, and so on and so forth. And on the other hand, he had the Rambam to contend with his 13 Ikorim, that the Torah is never going to be changed, never whatsoever. He came up with an unusual strategy to be able to answer them. He said, fine, we can admit theoretically that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should he want to abrogate the Torah, may do it. We are not going to bind his hands. For if we do bind his hands, we have rendered him an ineffective idol. Elama, should he desire at any time, it is only logically consistent to require HaKadosh Baruch Hu to change the Torah with at least the same circumstances under which he gave it to us the first time. Give me a Novi as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, and give me a Le'enei Kol Yisrael, give me every Jew seeing the revelation the way we saw it at Har Sinai. Should that happen, and should he so desire it to happen, the Torah may be changed, and that's it. Obiter dictum, the PS was, the revelation of Yeshu, of Jesus, in no way stands the same test. So you can never, never go ahead and bind HaKadosh Baruch Hu and say, if it happened once, it will never happen again.
I mean, this is a digression, I guess, but it just seems to me that you're sort of creating a bind by saying those are the conditions. I mean, he sets those conditions.
Well, he's setting up the condition that Chochmas HaKodesh is only in Eretz Yisrael is by virtue of the fact that that's the way HaKodesh Baruch Hu wanted it. You see, now should he want to change and focus on another land, I cannot stop him. But did he do it until now? He hasn't. Will he do it? Probably not. Can he do it? Why can't he? That's all I am interested in, is don't bind him. Huh?
Probably not.
Well, what answer would satisfy you better? Probably. I don't think he will do it. I don't think he will do it.
No.
We're talking about choosing Eretz Yisrael as the only source of Chochmas HaKodesh. That's the way I interpret it. What if he wants to choose Uganda, like 100 years ago? No. Yeah, okay. So that's what, I mean, probably not. There's a bris that he said that this is going to be the land because you, Avram, you, Yitzchak, and you, Yaakov, were Moshe Nefesh for this land, not for Uganda, not for Zimbabwe. Line 5. Ve'al yedei atzipiyah. By the deep yearning ha'amuka, the otet Eretz Yisrael, to be able to see Eretz Yisrael, mizdarachas kitzata ha'ara miziva chachma shel Eretz Yisrael, there shines upon you a bit of this luminescence, miziva chachma, from this brilliant source of knowledge that you get of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, for instance, when Rabbi Yehuda Alevi wasn't in Eretz Yisrael, and he wrote us the Tzion Halo Tishali Lishloma Sirayach, he wrote us the kino that we say on Tisha B'Av, describing his incredible yearning from the very depths of his existence to be able to be there, then that comes, that inspiration comes as a result of the slight radiance that one sees coming from Eretz Yisrael because you yearn to be there. So that if a Jew cannot get there for whatever reason, but is so totally incarcerated in Lubyanka prison or in Siberia and knows he will never get out, the mere yearning to be able to say, I want to, even if I have to come arrive on a bed, on a stretcher where all my bones are broken, that is enough. That is enough to be able to feel the Chochmas HaKodesh of Eretz Yisrael reflected in a certain way.
Does it even have to be just necessarily a prison or any places you point out? I mean, it could be to a person living a relatively, quote, good life in the United States of America and also can get his life.
Again, Rabbi Yehuda Alevi was not a poor man. He was quite a wealthy man. As a matter of fact, when he wanted to leave, when he told the Spanish community that he was going to leave, they were ready to bribe him with all the wealth in the world above and beyond that which he had. That tzipia, that desire yet to go, and the fight that he had with himself the day or the week or the month that he hesitated in going as a result, that is it. That is the prison that we talk about. Now, any Jew who says Uvnei Yerushalayim or V'hachazireinu b'shuvos shalema lefonecha, or whatever it is, or V'abiyenu l'sholom me'arba kamfos ha'oretz, and you go ahead and you take the four corners of your tzitzis at that moment to kiss, that's probably one of the most powerful ways or the most potent ways of being able at that point to understand this ziv ha'chokhma, this reflection of the chokhma of Eretz Yisrael. Maybe at that moment, we need theoretically as much kavana to understand this as we have for four lines later, the Shema Yisrael. I should be able to overcome the fight, the pulling, the tugging, the polar tensions that gnaw at me for whatever reason, whether it is family or whether it is friends or whether it is the need for security, and I just can't see myself functioning in a new society with such different norms, whatever it is. These are real karbonas. These are massive karbonas for Eretz Yisrael. I don't mind sharing it with you. 9 years ago, it's going on 10, when I was granted the sabbatical by Young Israel. It was the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that at that time, those who were in Young Israel, who were to make the decision, didn't know what a sabbatical was. Do you eat milchiks, fleshiks, or parv? So they said, yes, he wants a sabbatical, go. Those who understood by looking up the word in a dictionary thought that I would not come back. So when the word got out, the others said that I have to sign a contract to make sure that I come back. And I gave it to Kieskov. I gave a gentlemanly handshake to say that I will be back in a year and try to share my luminescence that I pick up over there in Chochmas HaKodesh and share it over here. So Atake came back. Do you know what kind of a tug it was to turn down 6 such propositions, 3 of which were Young Israels in Eretz Yisrael who had asked me to remain? Do you know what it is to have to go to Eretz Yisrael and be able to be paid more than the Prime Minister, spend 6 hours in making that amount of money, and being able to finish Shas? This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Because I'm an idiot. I just explained it to you. What are you asking? Because I'm an idiot.
You're right.
So I didn't need you. I didn't need you to. I didn't need you to encourage me. I knew that. I'm on record. I don't understand you. But can you understand? And what's more, those around me who saw me that next year knew what hell I was to live with. Absolutely knew what hell I was to live with. I'm thankful to those who knew my true nature before for having taken me literally by the hand and said, cool it. Cool it. Otherwise you lose yourself and you lose all of us. This is what he is talking about. Huh?
Never should have went.
Well, that's not what Sandy Sterman says.
Sandy Sterman says differently.
Never went. It was the greatest year of my life. It was the opportunity for which I am eternally indebted to my congregation for. It is an opportunity that what I learned in 30 years, my children learned in 13 months. Okay? It took me 30 years to be able to learn things that took my children from 2 to 13 months. Let's go. Rav Kook. Line 5. Well, we did it already. I'm sorry. Let's go to 8. Hey Nemet, it's true that everyone has Chefzas B'tichus, has a desire for certainty. Vistam chokhmo todieni. These are words that are difficult to understand. And that you inform me, God, of chokhmo stam in various ways, in any kind of ways. But v'omer, it says, on the other hand, heitiva biritzonecha es tzion. Your desire was to be mative, to put Zion on a higher level, tivne chomos Yerushalayim, and build walls around Yerushalayim, so that, what does a wall do? It shuts out everything else. It makes that territory mutually exclusive. The four walls of your house delineate that this is your private property, and no one else's. This is what you wanted to do when you build a wall around Yerushalayim. Heitivo biretzoncho es Zion. To make it tov, to let it stand on a level above and beyond everything else. And that's why you built a wall around Yerushalayim. And as the walls of the Beis Hamikdash were built around that, those Dalet Amos, you wanted that the windows should spread out, should go ahead and diffuse the light all the way out. But the essence, the core, the place, the address of the nuclear reactor of Chochmas HaKodesh was in one place and one place only. the center of the world, so to speak, and that is Yerushalayim. Therefore, we can say Hallel when? On Hanukkah, but we can't say Hallel on Purim. It's difficult.
What does it mean with the
Tufa? Heftzas Bitichus, I read it. There is a desire for certainty. What kind of certainty? The certainty of Stam Chochma Todieni, that Chochma can come from all kinds of derivatives. Just in Eretz Yisrael, I'm a Chocham? Now, the Chochmas HaKodesh, the certainty of the Kedusha, of the existence of a Ribbono Shel Olam in this world, can only come from one source. There's only one transmitter, and that is Yerushalayim, in other words, Eretz Yisrael, which is nothing different, it is only a poetic repetition of his first line, of his opening statement. And that was, that Chochmas HaKodesh Eino Zorachas Ki Im Be'eretz Yisrael. There's no other way.
I'm trying to think about what we talked about before, about a Navi Sheker. I don't recall anything in the little I've learned about, obviously is nothing, concerning if a Navi, if someone claims to be a Navi outside of Earth, he's really obviously not a Navi, Navi Sheker. There's nothing about geographical location, the qualification to be a Navi in the Torah that I can think of when Rambam, when he talks about it. I guess Navi theoretically could be in the site according to everything you read, but not according to what's that over here.
A Navi can be in Pesach if his roots of Navius were in Eretz Yisrael. Now, if he goes ahead and the Nevuah was told to be publicized unto Klal Yisrael, and he's told to come to Pesach, much like Yonah in Tarshish, and in Nineveh, okay? Much like Yonah in Nineveh, he had to do it. But the Nevuah came to him in Eretz Yisrael. How's about taking a look at page 4? Let's see if we can make some headway as to this internal light. This light that we spoke about, the light of Kedusha, resides in every single neshama. We say it every single day. Elokai neshama shenasata bi tahorahi. Because the neshama is ato berosa, you created it, therefore it is pure. Ato yitzarto, you fashioned it, v'ato nefachto bi, and you went ahead and you installed it in my mechanism of my body. V'ato mishamro bekil bi. And knowing that you exist keeps me in alignment and protects me from losing that neshama, losing that quality. The trouble is that it can be sometimes once in a lifetime that we realize this dimension, or that we see within us this light potential for Kedusha. Ha-hekerus ha-penimis sheba neshama holchos u-mitchazkot b'kirba. I'd like to translate it. The inner qualities or the inner dimensions that compromise, that consist of our neshama, that comprise our neshama, constantly grow within it as time goes by. Again, he is saying nothing more than yafutsu mayinosecha chutza, that light has got to grow, has got to go higher and higher, has got to intensify, much like Shitas Beis Hillel in the Chanukah candles. It's got to go from 1 to 2, and from 2 to 3, and 3 to 4, 4 to 5, all the way up until we reach its potential. How does one see the light, the inner light within him. I'll use a favorite word in your vocabulary, Jerry, recently, this energy, this internal energy. How does one see it flow? How does one see it glow? We're on the second line of that. Kishayifnu lefaneha es haderech me'avnei ha'michsholim. When one goes ahead and clears the path from stones that will trip him, which are those? Shehem ha'machshavos ha'raos. Those are improper thoughts, midos, improper qualities, ma'asim mekulkolim, and ugly, disgusting deeds. When these things are cleared away, it then allows the light to radiate. Mitromemet me'atzma hi haneshama el cheshka ha'elyon. Then all of a sudden, by its very nature, me'atzma, by its very nature, the neshama is capable of elevating itself, me'atzma, by its very nature. Why? Because el cheshka ha'elyon, until its upper source. In other words, he has a theory here no different than the Ari's alignment, that in Shemayim there are ideal states, and these ideal states are recreated on earth, and what we have to do is a process of alignment, tikkun, to make sure that what's functioning here is identical to what the original ideal intent was. An example is the neshama. The neshama that, as we say it, is total purity, and our job is somehow to be able to rip away the packaging of Olam Hazeh so that it can be in direct alignment with the source of the neshama, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, and act as if magnetized, so that if the source moves to the left, my neshama moves to the left. The source moves to the right, my neshama moves to the right. Up, I go up. Down, I go down. As if magnetized, in perfect alignment, one with the other. Chas v'sholem, to use a very simplistic mashal. Chas v'sholem, if you get in your car one day and you have the two wheels that you expect to be not only aligned but act in consonance, go at the same time. Can you imagine what would happen if one wheel went to the left and the other wheel went to the right? There you are. You're sitting with a holocaust, a mini holocaust. And the same thing is with the neshama in Cheshka HaElyon. It's upper attraction over there, which is Chelek Eloka Mimal, which is nothing more than a microchip from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that has been installed in us. That's all it is. And it must be totally aligned. It must be moved as the upper source moves.
He's saying that the neshama has a natural tendency to gravitate towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, sort of like a balloon tied to the earth. The ropes holding the balloon down are like these midos ra'os.
Correct.
Which are making it impossible for the neshama to gravitate to it in its natural direction.
Yeah. Well, except for one thing, that the balloon is okay up to a point. In classical Kabbalah, the magnet would give us a closer description of two items that are of equal that have the same properties, mm-hmm. of being able to be attracted to one another. And because there is the heavy magnetism up on top, then the lesser magnetism is pulled by virtue of those waves higher and higher and higher. And if anything stops or breaks the magnetic attraction, any kind of insulation that breaks these waves, then you know that the bottom is not going to be pulled. It's not going to be attracted by the source. So I have to clear away these insulations, the masim royim and the midos and so on, so that these two can naturally coincide. And this is no different than what the Rambam speaks about in terms of the prophetic progression of a human being to the point of prophecy. And this is exactly what it has to be. You have to forget about everything. You have to be able to lose yourself. In other words, forget that you have a self. And just slowly rise, and here the balloon would be good, slowly rise until you reach the source. And this is the statement that I happen to have shown you about tefillah also, where the tour writes, for chances are we have never davened in our life, because there's one condition that we haven't been able to do. When we are davening, the maaseh ha-mitzvah is what? The action of davening is to read words. The kiyum ha-mitzvah, the essence of davening, is somehow to be able to have the neshama reach such a point where you completely forget that you have 10 fingers, a body, needs, desires, and that there's only one thing, and that you want to seek the ultimate kiss of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pulling down, or you going up, whatever it is, either which way. If you have how many in a lifetime experience that? Do you know how long it's got to take? Do you know how much preparation it's got to take? Well, first of all, you have to admit to the fact that there is an neshama that you do have and I do have that can directly communicate with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You don't have to be a Moshe Rabbeinu. Every single human being has that receiving capability as a receptor of the transmitter. Now the trouble is that we just have to get the static away. That's what he's saying. Could take a lifetime. And line 94, the neshama then emerges in a state, lihiyos tova v'yeshura, to be ultimately good, ultimately straight, muchana b'taharasa, always prepared because of its purity, letohar hamusar, to be able to see that the way of musar, the way of proper behavior, is purity, always prepared lekir vas elekim, always prepared to be imminently near God, v'adinus haruach le'avas habrios, and the perfection, the filtering of one's ruach, of one's spirit, towards what purpose? Towards love of creation, ha-tzedakah, love of tzedakah, ha-chesed, love of chesed, v'hameisharim, the love of that which is correct and straight, anything in which you can be of service, maasios, practically, or ruchnios, spiritually. Hachinuch v'hahergel hatol, you're ready for education, you are ready for learning of new habits and good habits. And all of these, enom ki im tochnim ka'ela, this is the agenda for being able to go ahead and understand the purity that you have within us, that you have within yourself. Sha'amichsholim mispanim al yadom. And every pursuit of all of these things that he just listed here in the last three lines do nothing more than are the equivalent of taking away, raking away the leaves and taking away the stones one by one so that you have a clear turf. And then when you're able to clear the turf of all the rocks, then suddenly the light begins to sparkle by itself, and it starts to live as an independent life, as if the sun has just burst forth with its rays through the dark gray clouds in the sky. And that's what happens. Now, you can see this in so many ways. You could see it in probably the most potent way is to approach it from a simple psychological perspective. A person walks around with a burden on his heart, on his personality, on his mind. It drains him of all the energy that he has to do things. I'll give you a simple example. If you had a four-cylinder car and all four cylinders were working, you would be working efficiently. If you had an eight-cylinder car, double the horsepower, correct? Am I right? Eight cylinders should give you double the horsepower. But out of those eight cylinders, there are two spark plugs that are not firing and only six cylinders are working. What kind of a bracha are you going to have? You going to be able to get your car started? This is precisely in his paragraph what he is saying. If you are capable of tuning up the nefesh ha-yehudi, the neshama that we have, in such a way as to be able to understand that every single moment is fired the way that it was originally intended, and work on all eight cylinders, not six, but when you see that six are working, to go ahead and make sure that the seventh one is tuned up and the eighth one is tuned up, that's when all of a sudden the rays, the sparks of Kedusha, come and are capable of igniting your day, so that the day, the cloud, this cloudy day, is turned into a brilliant sun that radiates. This is the way the neshama is. Unfortunately, all of these chatoim, for whatever reason, for whatever motivation, each in his own way, happens to pull us down as to not to be able to understand and to be able to appreciate what really happens when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to us, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu challenges us, and we just don't know. We just aren't aware of it. Yeah.
I realize I don't understand.